Warning, the hosts of this program are not broadcast professionals. They have no idea what they're doing. They are bad at this. One of them uses swear words. A lot. All complaints about this show are correct. You have been warned. This is your last chance to download a real podcast. Okay, you asked for it. Here are Dave Brown and Iron Mike Irons. This is Entitled Town.
All right. Thank you, Al. Thank you for the announce. This is Entitled Town. I'm here with Iron Mike Irons. Once again, a great professional announce by Al. Al's going through a heck of a hard time. Back at his previous announcing job, I think it was like at one of those Pat's Pulpit podcasts or something. Turns out he might have faked an announce. It's possible that he was stealing some other announcers' announces, and it's a big scandal. And I don't know. It's looking like the American Podcasting League might come down real hard. So Al's worried about his job. And, you know, I'm telling him, I'm like, Al, it's all going to be fine. It's all good. You're on our team. We are Team Al 100%. I'm lying. I got to be honest with you, Mike. I'm thinking if the trouble comes, I'm throwing Al right under the bus. Do you agree? Hello. Did you mute yourself? Because now I can't hear you.
Big if true.
Did you mute yourself?
Al muted. Al does not want me to talk about this. Al's a lot like Ron Burgundy, Dave. On that teleprompter, he will read anything.
I was thinking, oh no, maybe Mike's microphone just quit and we're going to have to restart. But no. We had a technical problem. We solved it. We can continue with the show, and we can just be a little embarrassed by it. That's all.
Like a phoenix rising from Arizona, I'm back at it.
So anyway, in my thing there, I was saying that Al could lose his job, could get in big trouble, big scandal on the horizon in what might be a very thinly veiled metaphor for real life. I suggested that he would be thrown under the bus. How do you feel? Should we throw Al under the bus?
Well, I think we have to take professional responsibility for not vetting him in a background search. Did you ask him? Did you ask him about? Now you're right. Let's throw him under the bus.
Under the bus. Did you know that Al is short for Alex Cora?
Big if true.
It's not true. It's not true. I made that up. But well, it's interesting. Suddenly, there's always all these polls and conversations on the radio about who's the most popular team, who's the most likable team in Boston. And I think until this week, if you had run a poll that was which Boston team are the biggest cheaters, I think we would have had a different answer a couple of weeks ago, but now I think there's an undisputed champion. I think the Boston Red Sox have climbed the top of that hill.
Congratulations, John Henry. You've managed to make Jeremy Jacobs no longer the least likable owner in town. And he is an embarrassment. Every time he opens his goddamn mouth, he admitted last week.
Which
he
one?
Henry? Henry. Okay. Henry's an embarrassment. Would you buy a used car from Sam Kennedy? I wouldn't.
Did John Voight drive it?
Not going there. No pencil marks in the.
Hey, if you can give me a John Voight driving that car, we're talking. I'm in car. Otherwise, probably not. Yeah, but.
I guess they have to go out there and put on a good face. John Henry admitted as much last year that he doesn't think a lot when he goes into those press conferences, hence him letting the cat out of the bag about them needing to go under the competitive balance tax next year. And it was embarrassed up there today. It was like basically a hostage video. He was only reading the script and then he was passing everything off to another despicable slug, Werner and Kennedy. And Chaim Bloom was the only one up there who actually looked like an adult, and he's the youngest man in the room. You get these three billionaires stumbling over each other.
You think he's looking around for the exit?
Yeah, I've made a terrible mistake.
I mean, I would have, you know what? I mean, This is just for the sake of conversation. I don't cover the Red Sox. I have no information on them. But I would feel like Mr. Bloom, you kind of get maybe a cleaner slate moving forward, right? Like, none of what happened before was your fault. You were brought in to rebuild the team to begin with. So maybe you get even like a little bit of extra cushion on your grace period. So, is this really that bad for – he's going to lose some draft picks possibly. That would be bad for Mr. Bloom.
I'd be very curious. You know, I made the point on social media this week. What did the organization know and when did they know it? How far up does it go on the food chain? Does it rise –
Are you watching the Aaron Hernandez documentary, or is this about the Red Sox?
The Globe en masse this morning, I'm sure it was a complete coincidence. Every Globe sports writer referenced the Hernandez documentary with their first couple of tweets today.
I mean,
I'm sure it's completely a coincidence.
This is an issue that's perfect for us to discuss. Is sort of the media. Dynamic in this city where one of the teams is owned by the same person who owns one of the newspapers and also one of the TV networks. And
Think about it. Shank all the time. Dan Shaughnessy, the execrable Dan Shaughnessy, constantly
the what?
Hammers home the theme of the Patriots media cabal. I think it might be a different wording of the phrase. Yeah, the Patriots media cartel. Think about this as the point you just started to make, Dave. The Red Sox own the Boston Globe. The Red Sox own Nesson. The Red Sox effectively own WEEI because they have them by the short curlies. How is that? The three of the most powerful four media outlets in Boston, the Red Sox have de facto control of. How is that? How is that? I mean, how Kirk Minahan tried to get in to the press conference today and had to be escorted out by Boston police. Who in that room is not compromised at some point? Maybe somebody who works for The Athletic, although Buckley was at the press conference today, and he's been joined at the hip with that organization as long as he's been writing for The Herald and now The Athletic. Who was there to offer anything in terms of a difficult question?
I don't know. I wasn't at the press conference, but...
Well, you're not a Red Sox writer.
But you know what this reminds me of a little bit? Okay, first of all, let's get into the issue of... media cartel. I mean, it's such a fascinating word because the so-called Patriots media cartel is like, you know, a handful of people who are scattered across. I mean, I don't know who specifically he's talking about. It could be me because I challenged some of the, but I think that term predates whenever I was relevant.
He doesn't know what he's talking about. It's a tired talking point.
Right, and it seems to me to be like sometimes you see reporters agree with some vocal people on Twitter, such as yourself, and I think that's supposed to be a cartel. What is going on in Boston? Okay, now listen, I don't know that there's any directive from any management level to cater to the desires of John Henry. I don't know.
John Henry's wife is the editor. She has no experience in that role previously.
But I don't know. Let's put it this way.
Whether it's explicit or not, Dave, it's implied.
Okay, so I want to set the floor for the harm here, okay? So at the minimal level, all right, you just sort of described you put this in the basket of almost like bad look. Except a bad look in this scenario matters because now normally that term bad look is what you say when you can't point to a specific harm. Terrible optics. A former criminal who's like a lifeguard and it's like, okay, but his crime was like he was stealing. Yeah, but how can I trust him? It's a bad look. The thing is when you're talking about this situation with the Globe, which again, as I've said in the past, is supposed to be like the paper of record in the city, covering the Red Sox, owned by the same owner. And you see this sometimes with like the Washington Post when they write about Amazon. They put a little thing at the bottom of the story that says the Washington Post and Amazon are owned by the same people. And you need to know that because there presents a possible credibility issue with the information that you just read. I don't know if the Globe does that with Henry. I don't even know if they need to. I think everybody in Boston pretty much knows that he owns both of them. But in this, thinking of this as sort of like the bad look scenario, that matters when you're trying to pin down the veracity or the credibility of the information that's being presented to you. And so even if they do not abuse their station, there is or their ownership over the two entities, even if they don't set out to abuse it, there's two problems. One, can the audience or the readers ever trust what they're getting, that it's completely free from any kind of influence? And two is the implication, is that there is a power dynamic where perhaps people, and I don't know if it's true of anybody, but it's something that has to be in the back of your mind as you're observing this. Is there anybody who feels like they're going to be better off if they comply with an unstated directive to work with, you know, the work within the interests of the owner? And these are the problems that arise when you have conflict of interest.
Again, well, I think you missed part of the point, Dave. You said that, you know, everybody in Boston knows that John Henry owns the Red Sox and owns the Globe, but that's probably true more often than not. It's more probable than not. But here's the issue. Dan Shaughnessy and Ben Volen are trotted out as Ben Volen's the national writer, the national NFL writer for the Globe. Shank is the de facto face of Boston sports. It's not just people in New England reading this stuff. It's people around the country, right, and it's creating an overarching narrative that always comes back, you know, making the Red Sox look good until today and putting the Patriots down. And maybe that's
set aside this issue with this current scandal. If I were with the Major League Baseball Players Association, it would really bother me that a media outlet with the power to influence the hearts and minds across the country and to really paint a picture of who each individual player is, okay, in a way where you can build narratives. We talk about this all the time, all these narratives around these players that either are true or aren't true and loaded with false information, and people get an idea of individuals that simply doesn't add up to what's happening in real life. And to have a newspaper with that kind of power, with national reach, where a guy like Dan Shaughnessy, could get on any national sports program he wanted to at pretty much any time, and whose work is syndicated and carried in newspapers all across the country, to have that kind of power at the hands of one of the owners would really bother me if I were with the MLB Players Association, because that affects your ability to negotiate in arbitration, in, you know, you could essentially poison someone's character and diminish their value in the marketplace. Again, I don't have any example that any of this has happened. I'm just saying this is the type of power that organization has.
You're just asking the question, caller.
I'm not even asking the question. What I'm saying is that these are conflicts of interest, okay? It's like when Jimmy Carter became president, he put his peanut farm in a blind trust, because if he were benefiting directly from that business, he had the power to change laws and change peanut regulations or whatever in a way that could put money in his pocket. And
it's interesting that you would know Jimmy Carter facts when his administration was before you were born.
False. You're close.
You're a learned man.
I was born during that administration. I immediately began studying.
Policy wonk. Got it.
So anyway, I don't want to sit here and do what we criticize a lot, which is kind of throw around baseless accusations. That's not what we're trying to do. What I'm trying to do here
is... Oh, that's exactly what I'm trying to do.
That's not what we do. It's what you do.
Okay.
But
I want to cut you off real quick, Dave. It goes back. This even predates with Shank. It predates the Henry buying the Globe. It goes back to his getting snubbed at the Super Bowl 31 breakfast, and he's had knives in hand for Kraft ever since.
Allegedly on the knives. But, yeah, I mean.
Oh, excuse me, the Shanks. You're right, the Shanks.
I mean, they've had, like, what, 20 years to work that out? I don't know. But, you know, it's one. I mean, again, I'm not – listen, but it's the power. It's the unspoken power that's sitting there that you have to be mindful of at all times. And to then, for somebody who's part of that power structure, to come in and say that, oh, it's the Patriots media cartel. And I took antitrust law in law school, and that word cartel is not a few people on social media and some reporters who agree with them. A cartel is somebody who owns the TV station and the newspaper and the baseball team and can fuse the interests, can use those, can take advantage of the synergy there to advance the interests of one of those organizations, possibly at the expense of the others and possibly at the expense of the readers by misinforming them.
And the cartel employ. Well, this media cartel doesn't just employ a Shank or the Mittens losing dullard Ben Volen. It continues to employ Kevin Cullen. So if you want to apply the same standard to this Globe media cartel, they employ Kevin Cullen should cast doubts on anything that they report heretofore and all that other bullshit. They can employ Kevin Cullen. God, I just, NBC Sports, not part of the
Kevin ran into cartel, trouble but, a couple you years
Tomasi,
ago.
It's yeah, a cesspool.
Kevin Cullen ran into some trouble a couple years ago with some details around his, and I was like, Kirk Minahan, we're talking about Kirk for the second time now, but, I mean, if we mention him one more time, we're basically the Minifan podcast.
Don't go there.
Or does he appear outside of your press conference? If you say his name three times, he appears outside of your press conference, and you have to have him removed.
Yeah, when we formally fire Al, he's going to be outside asking the tough questions.
Now I feel bad. I gave Steve Robinson a hard time today. I wonder if he was dealing with some nonsense from. Well, you know what? I wonder if he's dealing with some nonsense from Kirk at the press conference. But then I don't feel bad about it at all because he just like came at me on the podcast today.
I didn't get that far.
He called me a Red Sox. You didn't hear about this? He called me a Red Sox reporter from New Hampshire.
That's out of line.
and I cover the Patriots. I'm from I live in Boston, but yeah. That was funny. There was a whole issue that we here's what happened. We disagreed on Twitter, and then Steve basically called me an idiot on a podcast. So that sounds about right, I guess. If you disagree with someone on Twitter, you're an idiot, right?
I'm called that a half dozen times before I get out of bed in the morning.
I think that's how society works now. Like because he disagreed with me on Twitter, so I could come on my podcast and call him. And anybody who disagrees with you on Twitter is an idiot, right?
Cosine, yes.
Whoever you are as an individual, if somebody out there is disagreeing with you on social media, that person is an idiot, at least to you. Because if they weren't an idiot, you guys would be agreeing. And the only reason for disagreement is a mismatched intelligence situation.
Yeah, and that app is free, and it was a bizarre, bizarre day. I mean, everything that happened today. It's that press conference. I didn't get to see the whole thing due to some work stuff, but the three stooges standing up there just deferring everything. The poor new GM, as we mentioned, had no fucking idea what he's getting into. Oh God, what a.
Do you think that this sort of resets how we look at the Patriots now? Because when the Astros scandal first broke, there were so many national stories that were basically like, oh, well, the Astros did a spygate, which is absurdly I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous comparison for so many reasons. The biggest one being that they set up a camera in center field to look in at the catcher, and then they put a monitor right outside the dugout. Like, there's this whole talk about the video room. The way the Astros did it was they just set up the monitor, never mind the video room. They put the same feed to a monitor outside the dugout. And so live in the game, they could look at a signal and say, okay, here comes an off-speed pitch, and then they'd bang on a trash can and, you know, the rest. But when that first story first broke, everyone was like, hey, this is they're doing what the Patriots did. And now I feel like the severity of the punishment has reoriented people's brains a little bit in to gotten people back towards the right place, but the way that we got there is a little silly. Because I think that the punishment on the Patriots was so harsh that people thought it was worse than it was. And I think that Major League Baseball's really harsh punishment, the way they came down on the Astros and their manager and their general manager, is sort of giving people the signal that this is a very serious crime against nature.
It really is a really brazen operation if you think about it. Just right out in the open, right in the runway, trash can.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's, I don't know what they could do that would be worse. In terms
two managers lost their job. The Astros, when the Astros won the World Series in 17, they beat the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yankees in the ALCS, yep.
Yeah, and John Farrell lost his job, and he also lost his Apple Watch.
Right. Well, the Red Sox promised that they would not do anything like this again after they were caught with the Apple Watch. And again, that was before Cora was with the team when they made that promise. So my question is,
upper management makes that promise, right?
Yeah, right. Like who's accountable for that? Like,
so they had to, if they promised that to Major League Baseball, you could make the assumption that they had increased control over that sort of thing, over the prospect of cheating on the field. How does that not reflect on upper management and those three guys sitting there today?
Like, is there a memo somewhere? All right, so if you could show me where in Alex Cora's interview that they sort of gave him some due diligence regarding his thoughts on stealing signals, right? Like, we just had this controversy. We promised the league we wouldn't do it again. Where do you come down on this? And, you know, how do you ensure that people, your organization, will not be engaged in that kind of behavior? Did they ask him that question? Can they show us some notes?
You mark my words, at some point there's going to be unnamed sources point a finger at Dave Dombrowski. It's coming.
Big if true, but yeah. As you know, and is there somewhere in the organization where a memo was sent that said, we don't, like, these are the things as an attorney that I would be looking for discovery. Is there some kind of memo that says, don't do this? Did they do anything to prevent it? And if they could show the league a big pile of stuff, like every day we sent Alex Cora a memo that said, please don't cheat. If they could do that or something for a fraction of that, I'd say, okay, you did what you were supposed to do. Like, you tried, and this guy went rogue. But to just sort of paint, I think right now it's being painted as Alex Cora invented cheating, then came to the Red Sox and continued a rogue cheating operation within the franchise that nobody condoned. And I would need to see some evidence before I buy that that sort of defense.
To tie this back to the Patriots, the Astros cheating stuff coming out took less than 2 years in total. Mike Fiers, former major league pitcher, was the first to mention it. And the Astros, part of the punishment the Astros received was due to players were granted immunity, and they were also granted anonymity. And they gave up the goods, and they went to the Astros and Cora and Jeff Luhnow and A.J. Hinch. And the players and the organization were open about Mike Fiers. Even came out, like I said, ahead of time. Nothing in 20 years like that with the Patriots. You want to count Eric Mangini? No, Mangini just wanted them to get the damn camera off the field because the Jets had got caught in the wrong area in 2005 and playing at Foxborough. No former players have come forward. Just one video assistant who has been proven to be not trustworthy since then. So think about that. It's whatever. The Patriots are synonymous with cheating. Probably shouldn't be. They bent the rules. They haven't done anything else since then. The Deflategate, spare me the Deflategate nonsense. And spare me the press box incidents in Cincinnati couple of months ago. It took less than 2 years for this punishment and this to be meted out.
Well, it came to light rather quickly, and you know, the original Spygate happened months after, it was a full season, right? So
it was the first game of the 07 season at halftime. Yeah,
season had gone by since Mangini had left here, and
they played the Jets in the 2006 playoffs at Foxborough as well.
Yep, and twice during that regular season. Correct. And
Mangini's leaving the Patriots was a bit contentious.
There was some bad blood, but Mangini has since come forth and done an interview where he has said that he didn't expect the scope of this thing to get as out of control as it did, and he sort of was like just trying to keep the Patriots from sort of taking advantage of being on the sideline, and you know, that it was more of a gamesmanship kind of thing than a let's bury Belichick kind of thing. And you know, I mean, take anything Eric Mangini says with a grain of salt, but that's sort of his perspective now. But it was about a year, so he'd been gone for about a year before he unveiled this thing, and that's the problem with any conspiracy.
Mike Tannenbaum who really elevated it to the level that it got to. Mangini wanted no part of it, allegedly.
Well, right, that's what he said, right? But Mangini brought it to people's attention. He said for the reason of, like, to just kind of keep it from happening again. And then the Jets organization kind of ran with it in a way that he didn't expect them to.
Correct.
So okay, again, grain of salt, but the point here is that it started because you had a somewhat disgruntled Eric Mangini, I think. I don't think they didn't part on good terms when he left, and he had a competitive interest in keeping them from filming on the sideline. So the thing about a conspiracy is, for it to work, everyone has to keep quiet about it. And that's really hard to do the more people you have to get involved with any kind of operation. And it's amazing to me how in all of the allegations and all of the speculation about all the things the Patriots have supposedly done, the biggest thing that they've gotten in trouble for is Spygate. That's really the most... That's really
filming from the wrong. They were filming. You're allowed to film. They just filmed from the wrong location.
So they did that, and that was the only thing that they admitted to it immediately. When they were caught, they basically said, "Yes, we got your memo from Ray Anderson. We got your memo, and we don't care. We think you're wrong. We think that we're allowed to do this." And it was a 30-minute conversation between Belichick and Goodell, in which Belichick basically laid out all of the stuff that he was doing and why. And apparently Goodell didn't believe him, that he didn't understand the rule and the alleged rule. And other than that, so all of these alleged, like people, like there's supposedly someone went to this is from the Wickersham Venata report from 2015, which said that there was an unnamed person who said that the Patriots sent assistants or like low-level employees into opposing locker rooms to steal play sheets. And like, how has that never come out from anywhere? How is it one unnamed source? Where is like the angry person who got fired, or did they always just take care of everybody? Like, where is now? Like, now Bill has his two sons working for him, and maybe they can, like, you know, maybe they're loyal, but why haven't we seen this? It happened so quickly with the Red Sox and the Astros, where former players, like, I don't even know if they had access to grind. I think they just said it. And where is that mountain of, I mean, for all the things they supposedly would have had to have done, you know, with the headsets and with the supposedly stealing play sheets and Peyton Manning being paranoid that they were bugging the locker room, to make all of those things work seamlessly and covertly, you would have to integrate people who know what they're doing and then make sure that those people never have a problem and never have any incentive to talk. If you can manage all that, why don't you just focus on football?
when you break it down that way, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, I don't think I've seen it really done that. It's always what the media has done with regard to the Patriots for much of the last 20 years is, what's the old saying? When the legend becomes fact, print the legend. And it's easier to just rely on a crutch. You know, Mike Tomlin's done it. Mike Tomlin complained that he heard Zolak in his headset, which is a punishment in and of itself.
Yeah,
John Harbaugh's done it. Just look at the big picture. They're not the Corleones, you know, at post-war America. They're not. They're really good at football, and the jealousy it's engendered from their peers. Great, the access that they're not giving the reporters.
The thing they got caught for.
The axe grinding is ridiculous.
Spygate. The thing they got caught for was what I would say within the rules of the NFL was legally dubious. Okay. It was not entirely sanctioned by the rules and not entirely prohibited by the rules. And it was starting to get to a point where people in the league were less and less comfortable with it. Primarily, as according to reports, primarily because they were afraid that teams would steal information during a game and then go use it. So during that period from when the Patriots took over in 2000. In 2000, that 7-year period to the beginning of 2007, that's the time in which these practices became more and more, or became less and less legal. Okay, and that's when you're transitioning from people starting to be like, whatever, everyone's trying to steal signals, to actually, we're kind of worried about this because what if they're doing it in game? Okay, and then finally, up in 2008, they introduced the new headset with the radio headset for the defense, and this kind of behavior goes away. But that's the one time that something has come out that the Patriots were doing something illegal, and they've been there for 20 years, and the Red Sox and Astros got like 2 years before their big scandal came out. So this doesn't, you know, that's not necessarily to exonerate anybody, but where are all of the people? I mean, you would think just in the sense of being proud that you kind of pulled one off, like somebody would say something, and that simply has not happened. Wickersham and Van Natta interviewed like 90 people. They have none of them on the record. I shouldn't say that. Not none, but the most important allegations in that story are either things we already knew or the secret library, or they have no name next to the person, or there's a whole section of it where they just talk about rumors and suggest why those rumors might be true, which
you know
I
who's find referenced in that story. Greg Bedard's referenced in that story.
No. He's referenced in the Wickersham story about the beginning of the end from 2018. Right at the end of the 2017 season, there was the, is this the beginning of the end for the Patriots? And about all the infighting and the Jimmy Garoppolo controversy. That's the one where he suggested that the Patriots were going to give Jimmy Garoppolo a good look, or give Tom Brady a good look in 2018 to see if they should replace him with Garoppolo, who would already have been off the roster by that point. It didn't make any sense. Anyway, that was a different
story. You're right, I'm wrong, but I like my version better.
That story does reference something from Boston Sports Journal. So anyway, there's a whole section of the Wickersham Van Natta cheating story that is just people's speculation about what might have happened. And they go through like each Super Bowl, and it's like, well, the Eagles were convinced that the Patriots were in the huddle, like they had taped practices, and the Panthers were convinced that they had taped practices. And it's like, okay, and what evidence? Like, what's that based on? Nothing. It's based on nothing. They defended us really well, and we're pretty certain that because they defended us really well, that they are therefore cheaters. Like that's the only conclusion we can draw, is that we did everything right, and they must have been onto us through some cameraman who's out there not telling his story because why? I don't know. Anyway, but that's, you know, I find that to be a little irresponsible when you...
It's completely irresponsible. It's completely irresponsible. And it happens over and over and over. And it doesn't just happen in the local media who deal with him every day. It happens in the national media, and it goes, John Clayton's done it. They've all...
Well, Karabas today, Jared Karabas, in the course of defending the Red Sox, I think said that the Patriots taped a walkthrough on, here's the third time, the Kirk Minahan podcast this morning.
So Karabas doesn't have to go to the gym at all this week because he's been getting he's been doing enough simulating lifting just by pointing fingers in every direction at everyone. Not only is he going pointing at other teams, he's pointing at other franchises and other sports.
It's pretty like, wow. Like what was the one thing he said that like the Red Sox shouldn't have fired Cora? I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it was something along the lines of Alex Cora has been punished for what he did with the Astros, not with the Red Sox. And it's like, okay, but they haven't done that part yet. Like they just haven't gotten there, you know? And the part about the Astros is pretty damning. Like he's probably going to get suspended no matter what. I don't think the Red Sox are going to worry about the semantics of whether he's been disciplined specifically for what he did here yet. So that was one of his things. But I used to get mad at people like Jared this morning when they would say that the Patriots taped a walkthrough. And you know what? It's they're victims. They're victims of misinformation. It's in their heads because Marshall Faulk says it every year when they're in the Super Bowl. And Marshall Faulk's a victim because it's the story he wanted to hear and it was told to him in a newspaper.
Bob Kraft made two mistakes, two very, very fatal mistakes for how his franchise is viewed nationally. One was not suing the Herald back to the goddamn Stone Age for that libelous report by that squid Tomasi. And the other thing that he did was after the Deflategate nonsense in early 2015, he rolled over and took the allowed Goodell to embarrass him again and throw his franchise's success into question by letting him take the draft picks and paying the fine. And then thinking he'd go easy on Brady, and then he hammers Brady with a 4-game suspension.
I think he misplayed. Yeah, I think Kraft might have misplayed his hand, the second one. The first one, it is so – like, I understand wanting the gesture of suing the Herald for the false Spygate story.
Don't you think at least would have given any media outlet pause?
As an attorney?
Moving forward?
I don't know that anything is going to give any media outlet pause. As an attorney, I will tell you this. It's an almost impossible case to win because of the standard for libel of a public figure. And what happens is you're allowed to print false things about somebody unless you're doing it with a reckless disregard for the truth. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, he only talked to one source who... He says they didn't ask him if the camera was running, so it's kind of his fault. And I would categorize it as more of a negligent approach than a reckless disregard. Because a reckless disregard is sort of like somebody knocking on your door and saying, I have the truth. And you going, I don't want to hear from you. Or you get information from sources that contradicts the story you're publishing, and you kind of go ahead with it anyway.
Regardless, he's been promoted twice. At best, it was lazy, ignorant, and questionable. And he's been promoted twice since.
We've all been discussed on this podcast. I'm beating. It's also hard to prove that you've lost any financial damages between the time the story was reported and April of that year when they ran the retraction. And the retraction, by the way, I think that would help them. I'd have to double check on Massachusetts case law there, but that sort of mitigates the damage. So you would think, I mean, at least in the eyes of a court, it probably will. And yeah, so, you know, it's really hard as an attorney to advise going ahead with a defamation lawsuit against a public figure unless you have some very strong evidence that they overlooked some key details in putting the story together. And really, we're trying. Like, you have to get to successfully lose a libel case in most states, like, you have to have been trying to tell a lie. And so that part, I don't know that I 100% agree with you on, but I understand your, I understand why it bothers you. I do.
It had to be at least an option in terms of a public relations thing, at least beating his chest about it. The organization beating their chest about. Yeah. But that's neither here nor there.
They took the high road.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. That's a road. That's the road less traveled for me.
And sometimes when you take the high road, you ignore your opportunity to really hammer home how much you were harmed. And I think that they missed that. I also look, it was 2008. I don't think anybody necessarily knew how that was all. Like, you know, we were entering a different media landscape, and, you know, I'm not sure they knew exactly how this was all going to play out, but.
Yeah, it's hard to look into your crystal ball and see how that
unfortunate. So anyway, I see people like Carrabba's this morning, and, you know, Mike Francesa did it a month ago. I see them as victims now, and they've caught a disease of misinformation, and they're spreading
victims of their own success.
But, you know, it all started with, it also goes back to the head vampire. Like, that's the one who made all the other vampires. And so I'm just going to blame the head vampire now. But
that's fair enough.
So do you want to revisit this issue with, so last week we talked a lot about the Boston Sports Journal report about whether Bill Belichick was supposedly out there, putting himself out there on the market. And I think a couple reports since then have said that that is not true. Right?
That's correct.
You told me Schefter said it.
Correct.
And Tom Curran.
Correct.
Okay. So, somebody called up.
Let me back up there. I believe Curran did it. I don't have it in front of me, but I believe Curran did. And if I'm wrong, I apologize.
Well, this is big if true. Right. You said Schefter did it.
Correct.
All right. I'm taking your word for that. But okay. Here's somebody called in and asked Greg Bedard if he made it up when he was on Felger and Maz on Tuesday. Here's the clip.
Hey, I want to talk to the big boy.
Go ahead.
Last week you mentioned something about Belichick was available, whatever, from league sources. I'm just curious, like, where would you have heard that from? Because for the last week I've been thinking that you basically just made that up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I just made it up. Like, that's what I do. I just sit there and think about things. Like, what can I say? Like, obviously,
yeah,
I heard it.
Gets you clicked.
I didn't say.
It gets you listened to because you just make it up. And then
yeah, sure. Okay. You yeah, yeah, follow along with, you know, some other talk show hosts. Go ahead. Keep listening to them.
Okay. So, I don't know what that was supposed to be as far as.
That was a fan of the Kirk Minahan show calling in.
You think it was?
It was. It was Minahan reference that he got a heads up that call was coming.
Ah, okay. So I don't know what that explanation was.
It wasn't an explanation.
Yeah, that was weird. But so here's why I wanted to get back in this issue just a little bit. There were some things I kind of missed out on when I was trying to explain the sourcing angle and how, you know, the thing is, so there's these different kinds of sources that I explain, and you get things on background or you get things on deep background and you hold back the identity of the person. But just because somebody tells you something doesn't mean you should go with a story, even if you can attribute it to an anonymous source. And you have to, the bigger the story is, the more important it is, the more the onus is on you as a reporter to sort out whether or not it is actually true. And so if somebody's telling you that Bill might be on the market, let's say it's an agent with an interest in putting that theory out there, even if it's false. That's where, as a media person, you could be played. you could be used to advance a misinformation campaign to help set up leverage for somebody in a negotiation.
And that's a point I make often. They're not reporting. They're just playing stenographer.
Yeah. Like, you know, just because somebody tells you that doesn't mean you have to put it out there. And it reminded me of when I was reporting on high school football, in a place where high school football was a big deal. I got a phone call one night that relating to one of the local coaches. And the person on the phone told me that, you know, a handful of players, you know, important players in the team, like people who were starters, people who were like all, you know, area type players, okay, like winning awards and stuff, they were going to be leaving the team. And that's a big story, right? But then he goes on to say that the coach had done some things that were bad, okay, some really bad things. And I was like, wow, I go to my editor, I'm like, hey, we've got a heck of a story here. We have one source.
Single sourcing.
One source who's saying these things. But you know what? The good thing is that he listed the players who were supposedly quitting. So I get the players on the phone, and they are quitting. That checks out. Okay. Why are you quitting? Well, you know, we kind of had some disagreements with the coach. This isn't fun for us anymore. We want to go. Okay. I heard some other things.
Was one of them Lane Johnson? He wasn't having any fun?
Well, it was basically a Lane Johnson policy. They wanted to have fun. They weren't having fun. So I said to them, hey, by the way, the guy who called me and told me about this, a young person, approximately your age, who told me about this, said some things that this is what the coach did and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, no, that I've never experienced that. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Next player, same deal. Yeah, I'm quitting. But what you're saying, no, that never happened. So I talked to a third kid. Same deal. I'm quitting. I'm not having fun. But this other part that you're talking about does not ring true to me. Come to find out, the person who called us originally ratted out this story because that kid had been dismissed from the team or didn't make the team, was cut, and so had a grudge, grinding an axe, may have embellished a little bit. And so we go to press with the part about the players quitting, about only quotes from on-the-record quotes from the players who were quitting and why they felt like they had to walk away. It was not a fun time for me because I was told by the principal of that high school that I was going to be arrested for trespassing because the principal thought that I had gone to the school to interview the kids. I was not in the same county as those kids that day. I only talked to them on the phone. And he was like threatening to have me arrested. All right. He told me not to come to their games anymore because he couldn't guarantee my safety. And when I presented the coach, not with the bad stuff, the stuff that really would have, it was stuff that if it were true, he would have been fired. And I called him up and I had already abandoned that part of the story. I'm like, this isn't checkout. Unless I hear this from somebody else, I have no reason to report on this. The coach, you know, I start talking to him about the players quitting. And he's like, I really wish you wouldn't run this story. I'm not going to comment on it. Never spoke to me again. Okay.
Okay.
Nobody aware that I have now. Everybody's in the whole town is on my case for making up this terrible story about these kids quitting the team and yada yada yada. People on message boards trashing these kids for, you know, being too soft or whatever. Okay, and me for being this muckraker who was just out to get this coach. Nobody knowing that if that was my agenda, I had this. I could have just been irresponsible and just made that the whole story. But the point being that just because somebody tells you something, you can't, you, You owe the readers, you owe the audience a responsibility to say, not to sit there and go, listen, I don't know if it's true. It's what I heard. I heard it. I'm just telling you, it's out there. It's on the street. That is so dangerous. In the story I just told you, if I did that, if I had said, hey, I don't know what's true, but that's what this kid's saying, that coach easily could have been fired because some player that he didn't put on his team was carrying a grudge and embellished. He was giving me details from practices that he didn't attend. Okay? That's highly suspect. But I could justify it to myself by saying, hey, he maybe talked to some kids who are at practice. I could use the word maybe quite a bit. When you get to that point, you haven't done enough reporting. You have to go fill out the details.
So you, in this case, you practiced journalistic integrity. You did the legwork or the phone work, as it were, in this case. You talked not only to one person, you followed up with other players. You got the full story. I think there's another piece is falling into place why you haven't got a bigger profile in Boston media.
Well, I didn't go for the salacious angle, which, you know, would have, which
90
really
seconds, no. And this is what happens on 98.5, right? This is what happens on 98.5. They recklessly will throw this stuff around.
Well, this is the whole media now. It's as soon as you hear something, instead of going to the editor and saying, okay, here's what we got, and let's sort all this out. You know, which of this do we find credible? What do we not? I could have written 10 tweets about it by now. So why don't I just do that? Like, why don't I just tweet it all out? And, you know, later on, we'll let God sort it out wherever the chips may fall. Like, you know, I mean, that was a too cliche tag I just put on that. But yeah, I don't think this is the way it's supposed to work. I don't think it's good for the readers and the people on social media to be consuming news this way. But people want the drama. They want to feel like something's happening. And right now, and the thing that's stunning to me is that people are just willing to give information away for free on social media.
And on the radio.
As soon as it comes into their head, and like, here you go, world. Here's the information. That's what somebody said to me. So,
and here's what bothers me, Dave. If you call out the guys on 98.5, I mean, I'm going to focus here just for the moment on 98.5. If you catch them making up shit, lying, be there's whatever it is, slandering somebody, whatever it is, they'll always fall back on, well, we're entertainment. We're not journalists.
We're entertainment. We were joking.
Then you get this asshole, Bedard, going on the most trolling, factually or inaccurate, the show that you couldn't possibly misrepresent anything more absurdly than they do on that show, on the 2-6 on 98.5. Bedard goes on there, dances for him, spreads this shit, and he's an alleged journalist and wants to be treated as such. You can't have it both ways. Volin does it too. Volin goes on 93.7 in the morning. He dances for a sleepy Saki over there. There is no journalistic. It is infuriating. Volin a couple of years ago, moving this over to Twitter, Volin a couple of years ago reported, I believe it was Darius Fleming, the former Patriots linebacker. Mm-hmm. He reported that he was involved in an accident and insinuated that he was at fault in an accident that was pretty severe. What the story was, and it was confirmed by the Massachusetts State Police, was that Darius Fleming was in fact a hero and pulled a person out of a car that was in jeopardy at the time.
Right.
So the waters are muddy, but they want to present themselves as a journalist and want to be taken seriously when it's convenient for them, and then be able to fall on the sword of just being able to fling shit whenever they want. If you want to be a journalist, you can't have it both ways. You can't go on Felger and Maz and dance for them and be mocked. He's an object of mockery and derision on that show. How that's good for your bottom line, I don't know.
I don't think it is, but, you know.
Somebody should make an offer to buy that business.
It's frustrating.
I'll open bidding at $150.
What do you think? All right, how about right now? We say to Greg, listen, Greg, let's put all our differences aside. We would like to buy your website. We know that you have a new gig, the Las Vegas Review Journal. Is that what it's called?
It is.
Okay, that newspaper in Las Vegas. And, you know, why don't you go focus on that, and we'll run this thing. And I know we've said some things about you in the past, but we'll let bygones be bygones, and we'll even like keep your name in the masthead as founder emeritus.
No, we're not.
And I'm trying to build consensus here. All
you know what's going to be in the masthead? Arizona tight end Gronkowski. I just don't see it at all.
Quote, founder emeritus, Greg A. Bedard. See? That's compromise.
look at us making deals.
But, you know, we'll give you X dollars for it. What do you think? I don't know if we could swing it, but.
Just do what he does. Post-date the check.
You know what? How about this? I've been hearing on the street that Greg might be interested in selling this thing.
Yeah, we've both heard some things.
And I'm telling the street.
Investors were sought at one point, yes.
That maybe we are interested in buying it. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm not saying that we're in play. I'm just saying everything is on the table.
GoFundMe/entitled.
How does that sound?
Sounds wonderful.
So, all right. So where are we with this? Do we have anything else that we need to talk about tonight?
I think we're good. To be honest, this subject with the Red Sox stuff today and Bedard, and this is something we say a lot. It's really the reason why we do this. It's just, I'm frustrated. You're frustrated. We come from different angles. Every time I think the Boston sports media has hit rock bottom, they keep digging. And it provides endless amounts of material for people. And there's a good amount of like-minded people on Twitter, Ombudsman, that sort of thing. I'll tell you, this Red Sox thing, I didn't think it was going to be possible for me to not love the Red Sox. I don't know how I'm going to feel when the game starts, but I'm just so disgusted by what the Globe's done and what this ownership group has done. And I just don't know how I'm going to feel. I have so much enmity for that group.
You know, it's...
Which in and of itself is absurd. They've won 4 World Series in the last 16 years. To be able to forfeit that much goodwill with what I believe is a not small size portion of the fan base is remarkable.
Well, I would just say this is that, like, you know, if you, that's where I personally would just, I would block out the noise. I would just watch the games. And it's tough to block out the noise because the season is so long. But I would just try to focus on the team and what's happening on the field. And if you can do that, great. You know, but I understand.
And I'm getting to the point. I am getting to the point. Where, you know, I've long said that I will watch and I will listen and I will read so you don't have to. I'm getting to the point now where I can't do it. It is becoming to the point, it is toxic to the point where it just isn't healthy. It isn't, you know, trying to surround yourself. Believe it or not, I'm actually a fairly positive person in real life. I enjoy my life and this stuff, maybe it's therapeutic for me in a way, but the rage comes out at what I believe is stuff that's being misrepresented, you know, lied, distorted. It's. I would say it's shameful, but I would say the people who are perpetrating this have no shame.
Okay. Well, if you want to get into to toxic and hateful, I got some reviews here.
Oh, please, fire away.
All right, let's see. These are reviews of our show. We would urge you all to go out and review one way or the other. Whether you like us, you love us, or you hate us, just review it. Drop a star rating, and then we can it helps people find us. But I will say that our perfect 5.0 is no longer intact. We have fallen to 4.5 on the on the Apple Podcast rating system. And here are some of the reviews that we got recently. We got one from our friend Ned Stark. I'm sorry, Ned Snark from Twitter. He wrote 1 star. No way. Dave dares us to rate 1 star. Don't do it, Ned. Okay, so this one says, finally, I don't feel crazy. 5 stars. I've been a Patriots fan my whole 26-year life, and I've been inexplicably forced to constantly defend the team. This is a nice reminder that not everyone is crazy.
Well, I like that. Well, thank you for the review, but if you're agreeing with me...
It's called I Don't Know Why, is the reviewer.
Well, he may want to reconsider not being crazy if he's agreeing with me, but go ahead.
Well, I'll say, you know, one of the reasons that I set out to do a show like this is I wanted to help people understand, like, there is that feeling where, like, you see things in the media and what you know to be true, and you're going, either I'm stupid or I'm crazy. And or either the media is stupid or I'm crazy is kind of like where you wind up. And it's really helpful to hear somebody else say that they see it your way and that maybe you aren't crazy. So either we're having a shared delusion or no, I don't know why. We're not crazy.
Well, it's not a lie if we believe it.
And here we go. Let's see. This is a 1-star review from DanMan2296. Liked it at first, then fatigue set in. That's the headline. The only thing more obnoxious than the Boston sports media is Mike Irons' incessant whining about the Boston sports media on this podcast.
I'd like to thank Lou Merlotti for writing in. Lou, good job. Thank you.
Oh, we're not done. Troubling because Dave is one of the most insightful, witty, and engaging Pats writers out there. But until he gets a new partner, this is almost unlistenable.
And who wrote this review?
This is DanMan2296.
I'll tell you this, you're not wrong.
Here's what I'll say. I'll say that if listening to Mike complain about the Boston media, if you don't enjoy that, this podcast is not for you, and it never will be.
I beg you, click the unsubscribe button, please. This podcast is all about that.
We got 5 reviews. Here's the last one this week, another 5-star review. It's pretty funny. Like, we got 5 reviews. 4 of them were perfect, but our rating went down. It's called Great Listen is the headline, and it's from somebody named Fudgeface 51264. I don't know why they needed 51,000 fudge faces, but this person's somewhere in the 51,000 range.
I do not want to know the backstory.
Here's their 5-star review. Very BSMW-ish in a good way and with more swearing. So there you go. That being Boston Sports Media Watch, when they say BSMW, that's what they're referring to.
The great Bruce Allen.
Yeah.
Friend of Entitled Town.
Hey, 5 reviews this week. Like to see that. So
there were 5 reviews. 4 of them were 5-star. 1 was 1-star. It sounds like Apple Reviews is using the Pro Football Focus grading system.
Well, it couples in with some other. So we had kind of gotten like a rounding thing in our favor up to a point, and then another 1-star review kind of dropped that down. Because it looks to me like we have 3 1-star reviews. 1, and this is just a guess based on the shading of the little lines next to the stars, but it looks like we have 3 1-star reviews, 1 3-star review, no, 2 threes of 4, and the rest are all 5s. So we have like less than 10 that aren't 5s, but 3 of them are 1s.
The good news being, if we can get back over 4.9, that means we'll have exceeded Dale and Teeth's ratings for the last book. Five seconds of dead air. Entitled Town, bingo, free
space. I was trying to do the math. So let's see. There are 77 reviews. six of them are less than five stars. So that's 71 times five plus one four-star review.
Plus, doing the math makes for good podcast airtime.
It does, I think. Two three-star reviews, so that's another six, plus three for the three one-star reviews equals 368 divided by 77 equals 4.779. And they didn't round up to a five for that? That's ridiculous. I question your math. But anyway, we're like at a 4.78.
And the math portion of the Entitled Town podcast was brought to you by the Off Day podcast, who sponsors this segment to try to get you to listen to them.
Go listen to them, man. If you don't, especially if you don't, not into Mike. Go listen to, you know what? Here's what I'll say. If you're not into this podcast, go listen to all the rest and then decide if you want to come back.
Again, I'm with you, Dave.
All right. I think we've done a whole podcast here. I think, but here's a question. Has Dave Colonnade asked you to do the Jerry Callahan podcast?
Dave Colonnade would be fired if he presented that to Jerry Callahan. That I am confident of.
I'm pretty sure he's asked you to do it.
Have you been asked by Dave Colonnade to go on the Jerry Callahan podcast?
You know what? I think he's asked you, and I think for me it was more like, I don't think I was asked to do it. Think I was asked if I would be interested in doing it.
I listened to Jerry. Full disclosure. Different. I listened to Jerry's podcast. My head explodes when he starts talking sports.
Well, that's dangerous.
He also managed to do some pretzel logic when I can't remember if this was today or yesterday. I believe it was today because he was talking about Antonio Brown in that just completely unhinged diatribe when he dropped the N-word. And Jerry somehow made it about Riley Cooper can't get a job after Antonio Brown did that. It was really kind of a weird thing. Getting ready in the morning. Yeah, it's I'm going to have to re-listen to it. It was some really impressive narrative shifting.
See, I think I was asked, like, would you be willing to do it? Not that we're asking you. Like, I think it's...
I'm not doing a Jerry Callahan podcast, first and foremost. It's, you know...
We're going to gauge your interest. And if you're a no, then we're not going to bring it to Jerry. But if you're interested, then we'll see what Jerry thinks. I think that's where I was in that conversation.
I think you would do well with Jerry. I think you would counterbalance his insanity.
I think that would be a really interesting show. I would listen to that if you were on.
No, I'm talking about you. If you were on with Jerry, I think that would be fantastic.
I think it would be. It could potentially.
You had to done the Daily Double because you've been on Kirk's podcast too.
I have a theory. I think it could be. I wouldn't say this about Kirk's podcast, but I think it could be the best show Jerry does if I was on it.
I'm with you, sir.
I think there's a room. I think there's a place in there for a conversation that has not happened on any podcast.
Yeah, if Jerry truly wants to be challenged, have Dave on.
But you know what?
I won't listen when Alex Reamer was on.
You're not thinking like I am. I'm not thinking.
Thank God.
Challenging Jerry. I'm thinking of going on there and having a conversation with him that no one is having. So, I'll leave it at that.
All right. Yeah. Don't give away your secrets.
No, I would never do that. You never know. It could be spies trying to steal our secrets. So by listening to our podcast and we say them out loud and they write them down, that would be dangerous.
Before we go, send us some feedback if you want, not just on the Apple podcast. Our Twitter account is @EntitledTown. The email address is EntitledTown@gmail.com. We'll give you a shout out. We'll answer a question if you have one or read a remark. So feedback is always welcome, even from you, Lou Maloney. So thank you for writing it.
All right. So I think we've done a podcast here. I think
we have.
And thank you very much for the time. What are we on to? Are we on to anything?
Well, we're on to the NFC and AFC title games, and we'll be back next week.
Maybe try and record earlier next week, I think, would be a good idea. Which this one was totally on me. I just couldn't do it before now.
It's a team effort, Dave. Let's shoot for Monday or Tuesday. I'm sure there'll be some takes about the AFC and NFC title game, and all I'm right, sure the Cora stuff, the investigation may fall, or maybe it'll drop on a Friday,
or they'll punish the Patriots.
Take their picks, NFL. All of them.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in, and we've promised you Monday or Tuesday, which means you can bank on us getting it done by next Friday. And thanks a lot, and bye for now.
See you.